Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Welcome. I've got two great podcasts lined up for you this week. I'll be chatting with the author of the book, Finance Monsters. The author of the book is Howard B. Hill. Howard was one of Wall Street's original rocket scientists. He developed a number of financial products that we'll be chatting with him about. But more importantly, we're going to get his perspective on what caused the last financial crisis and get his opinion as to the likelihood of another financial crisis occurring. Is another financial crisis imminent? We're going to be talking to a guy that was there in the trenches when the last financial crisis hit. So certainly it will be a terrific conversation. I'm looking forward to that. And also on both podcasts this week, I'll be talking about the difference between currency and money. You may think currency and money are the same thing, but when you study history, they are definitely two different things. And understanding the difference between currency and money can be the difference, in my view, of prospering or failing in what may lay ahead economically. So you'll want to listen to both podcasts this week to get my take on that. I am pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program today, Mr. Howard Hill. Howard was one of Wall Street's original rocket scientists. His innovative bond structures helped lower the cost of home financing on three continents, and the analytic techniques he pioneered have become essential for investors and risk managers and many of our largest financial institutions. Howard is credited with an unequaled number of industry firsts in the securitization market. His team executed first-time securitizations that lowered financing costs for apartment buildings, equipment leases, mobile home parks, nursing homes, and life insurance policy loans. After working at investment firms for 25 years, Howard now trades his own account and writes the popular blog mindonmoney.wordpress.com. His book, Finance Monsters, is what we want to talk to Howard about today. And Howard, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Howard, let me just ask, because we are talking about, we were talking before we started to record our conversation about the financial crisis. Let me ask you, just going back to someone who worked in the trenches when it came to these securitizations, subprime mortgages get a lot of the blame for the last financial crisis, but what caused the financial crisis back in 2007, 2008?
Well, in my opinion, subprime mortgage credit problems were, you know, definitely the spark, but there wouldn't have been the fire if there hadn't been a system that allowed people to create additional credit risk triggered or keyed on those subprime mortgage bonds and trade them all over the world. That was the credit default swap market.
Howard, for our listeners that maybe aren't familiar with what that term additional credit risk means and what a credit default swap is, give us a 101 level explanation.
Okay. A credit default swap, the easiest way to think of it is as a form of bond insurance that someone could buy if they own a bond or if they want to just speculate that the bond might default in the future. And because it was, at the time, a completely unregulated and undisclosed business, the limitation on the number of insurance policies that could be written wasn't related at all to the number of bonds that were outstanding. So, for example, when we all got surprised by AIG going down, it turned out that, you know, AIG that had no exposure directly to the mortgage market that mattered, had hundreds of billions of dollars of exposure via writing these insurance policies called credit default swaps. And it was margin calls on those insurance policies that really took AIG down even before there were losses in the mortgage bonds they were insuring.
So, Howard, since the financial crisis, there have been regulatory reforms, or I should say maybe attempts at regulatory reforms. Dodd-Frank is one that comes to mind. Has this problem been adequately addressed, or is it possible that we could see a repeat of the financial crisis, as so many of my guests have predicted?
Well, I think that we're actually actually set up to have a repeat sometime, somehow. I can't tell you what the trigger will be, although lately the discussion is whether the falling oil price might serve as that spark that lights the next big trouble. And the reason for that would be that if there were enough bets out there against those junk energy company bonds, then the outfits that wrote those insurance contracts, banks and insurance reinsurance companies primarily, they might end up owing more than the amount of the bonds. And we could have, again, a situation that ripples through the entire financial system with no one knowing who has the exposure. And that's probably the biggest danger in all this, is that once you know there are large losses somebody has to take, if you don't know who it is, then you can't do business with anyone. And that's how the financial market froze in 2008.
So, Howard, I'm sure that some of the listeners listening to this conversation are having a very difficult time believing that it's hard to know what the size of these ultimate liabilities might be. How is that possible that this isn't being tracked or regulated?
Well, you do have, in some small way, the total amount outstanding. You get quarterly reports from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency that shows gross exposure to these credit default swaps at U.S. banks. I think the last quarter, the total was $2.77 trillion. They don't say where they are, you know, which banks have what exposure. So if you were just looking at a given, let's say, a shale oil energy company that got, you know, a little bit out over its ski tips and is now going to have trouble with oil prices down here at 60, there might be on a single bond 10 or 20 or 100 times as many of the insurance policies written as there are bonds. And you won't know which bank has those insurance policies on their books.
Howard, I had a guest on the program who I think said that when you look at exposure, derivative exposure at the too big to fail banks, that it's actually now about 20% higher than it was prior to the financial crisis. What would be your opinion? Does that sound like that's on target in your view?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I think the last total figure of derivative exposures in the OCC report was around $280 trillion. Pretty amazing, given that we've got, what, a $17 trillion economy?
That is mind-boggling that exposure is, what, probably 17 or 18 times the size of the economy. What kind of risk, I mean, with 200 and, let's just say, $80 trillion of derivative exposure, what kind of risk is that? Might that pose for a bank?
Well, the banks do calculate, and the OCC reports, and I should probably go online and log it up, log on and find out again. But as best I can recall, without looking at the numbers, I think there was somewhere around just shy, maybe $377 billion was the figure for, quote, value at risk. Now, that's kind of a faulty measurement, one that unfortunately causes bull and bust cycles. Because what happens is value at risk looks back over the last 100 days or a year and says, okay, 95% of my daily price moves in these things was less than a certain amount. And they say, okay, that's the value at risk, as long as we've got 95% confidence that's our one-day price move. Unfortunately, the more stable a market gets as it goes upward, that measure gets smaller and smaller and smaller until it breaks out, at which point it triggers margin calls, collateral calls, fear in the market, all those things that can cause a sudden break. So if it is, say, $377 trillion today, or billion, in exposure at the five biggest banks, that probably could immediately become $1 trillion with just a simple break in pricing on these derivative instruments. Just all they have to do is go outside the envelope they've been trading for the last 100 days or a year.
All right. Well, we are chatting today with Mr. Howard B. Hill. The book is Finance Monsters. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you're with me today, and hope you're having a beginning of a really good holiday week. You know, in this segment, I want to talk about a fiat currency, and I want to talk about something that very few folks, from my experience, understand, and very few financial professionals understand. And that's something called the currency money cycle. And we'll talk about the differences between currency and money in this segment. And just to get started, let me just talk about some of the features of money. And what is money? Well, money is really just a tool for trading your time. It's a container, if you will, to store your economic energy until you're ready to deploy it. Well, isn't that what currency is? Well, no, currency is really not money. Currency is a money imposter that's quietly stealing your two most valuable assets, your time and your freedom. And substituting currency for money is a cycle that keeps repeating itself, and we call that the currency money cycle. Now, what is the currency money cycle? Well, initially, money and currency are the same thing. Money and currency, often, historically speaking, were gold. Gold and silver have been a good store of value over time, and gold and silver have often been money over time. Then, as time goes on, and politicians tend to overspend, money and currency become two different things. So just to ask yourself this question, and answer this question for yourself, given three choices, which of these choices do you think politicians often take when it comes to balancing your budget or closing a deficit? They can either A, raise taxes, they can B, cut spending, or they can C, print currency. What do they do? Well, you're exactly right. If you said C, that's typically what's happened historically. Now, what is currency? Let's define that just to kind of frame our conversation here in this segment. Currency is, one, a medium of exchange. You can exchange it for goods or services. It's a unit of account. It's portable. It's easy to move around. Hopefully, it's durable. Hopefully, it's divisible. You can make change. And it's fungible. And fungible is a term meaning that each unit is the same as the next. So currency is a medium of exchange, a unit of account. It's portable, divisible, durable, and fungible. Money is all those things as well. Money is a medium of exchange, a unit of account. It's portable, durable, divisible, and fungible. But money, and this is what's important, money is a store of value over a long period of time. Well, just to talk about the difference between currency and money, let me go back and explore with you the currency money cycle. See, if you go way back in history, you can go back to Rome, and we're going to explore that here momentarily, but just go back in U.S. history. You know, at the beginning of the United States history as a country, back in 1792, an act was passed called the Mint Act. And the Mint Act made gold and silver currency. Well, the currency had intrinsic value. It was a good store of value over time. So at this point, currency and money were the same thing. Then as time passed, you might find that paper money is used, but initially anyway, paper money has a direct link to hard money. So the paper money or currency can be exchanged for a fixed amount of silver or gold. So just think back to something called a silver certificate. Some of you probably are old enough to remember a silver certificate. A silver certificate, which these were actually printed from, 1878 through 1965. The silver certificates were redeemable for a fixed amount of real silver. So you could take the paper currency and you could go exchange it for the real money. So at this point, currency and money had a direct link. Then, the most recent example of currency and money becoming two different things happened when Richard Nixon, in 1971, eliminated that link between the dollar and gold, the dollar and something tangible. Since that time, currency and money have been two different things. And let me just give you an example to really make the point and explain the difference between currency and money. In 1984, the cost of a gallon of gasoline was a little bit more than a buck. So if you had to go fill up a gas tank and it had 15 gallons to fill it up, it would take $15. And since silver was about $6 to $7 an ounce, let's just say it would take a little bit more than 2 ounces of silver or real money to fill up that gas tank. Well, today, silver is selling for around 16 bucks an ounce. If we take the same 15-gallon gas tank and we want to fill up that gas tank at roughly $2.50 a gallon, nationally speaking, it still takes about the same 2 ounces of silver to fill up the gas tank, but it takes a lot more currency. Well, that is key to understanding the difference between currency and money. And as politicians decide to print currency rather than raise taxes or cut spending or balance the budget in an honest way, currency becomes a very poor store of value. Now, the currency that you have in your pocket, it is a medium of exchange and a unit of account. It has numbers on it, so it's divisible. You can make change. It's portable. It's somewhat durable. It's fungible because a dollar in my pocket buys the same as a dollar in your pocket. But because governments can print more and more currency and dilute the currency supply, currency is not a good store of value over time. The dollar, since the Federal Reserve was established and money printing actually could occur, that was happened all the way back in 1913. And since that time, the dollar as a currency has lost over 95% of its purchasing power. So when this money printing occurs, wealth is transferred from you and your bank account in the form of decreased buying power. And where does that wealth get transferred to? It gets transferred to the government and to the banking system. That's why the wealth gap, the disparity between those who are wealthy and those that are who are not, is wider now than it has been at any point in recent history. That is because of monetary policy and the Federal Reserve printing more currency and making currency and money something different. This is one of the topics that we talk about in depth in our Investor's Discovery Kit. And one of the components in the Investor's Discovery Kit is the book, New Retirement Rules. It's my book that was released a couple months ago. And other components in the Investor's Discovery Kit are a copy of the New Economy magazine, as well as an educational CD and DVD. The Discovery Kit is free. You can request it by simply visiting the website investingapproach.com. Let us know where you'd like us to mail the Discovery Kit. We'll be glad to do that. We do not share your information with anyone. Here at the Everything Financial Radio podcast, we're all about education. And as we close down this year and get ready to enter a new one, as you start to set financial goals for yourself, I would encourage you to get this valuable resource. It is free, and all you have to do to get it again is to visit the website investingapproach.com. Talk to you again in just a couple days on our second podcast of the week when we continue our conversation with Mr. Howard Hill. Bye.